Good morning. So today I'm going to start a series of talks on a text by Dogen called the Ehe Kosu Hotsugoman. Some of us are doing a practice period together. Oh, excuse me, we need to start with the chant. Please, let's do that. An unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Good morning again. So, as I said, we're going to be talking for a few weeks now about the Ehe Kosu Hotsugoman. Some of us are doing a practice period, studying this, practicing with this, reciting it, being together with it this month. This text has been very important to me for many years. I was introduced to it at Tassajara soon after my ordination as a part of the personal practice for priests. It's to be chanted daily. I can't say I've been utterly faithful in doing that over these last many years, but it is a part of me, this text. I have found it to be a solid touchstone, a foundation for exploration of what a life of practice means. We can think of it as a process, dealing with this text, reciting it, exploring it, as a process of placing one's deepest values at the center of one's life. It requires determination, care, connections, and persistence. It is not about harshness or rigidity. When we do this practice of examining vow, we challenge ourselves to wake up to this life, not define it according to our preconceived ideas. And in so doing, we transform our experience together with all beings. That means we ask questions, and there are no questions that are off the table. Things that seem like ordinary questions, simple questions, are often the most profound. And bring up hard questions, essential aspects of what your experience is. These need to be addressed. So as I said, the first evening that we gathered for the practice period, be brave. I want to read you part of a quote by a Buddhist scholar named Jeffrey Hopkins. And I think he names this. Let's see if I can find it. Looks like I may have lost the little tag to it. Okay, that's fine. What he says, in essence, is that we need to develop a mind willing to change, that the teachings challenge us deeply and we may want to flee, or as he says, sometimes we need to get up and walk around and turn on the television set. So don't be surprised if some of these teachings are a little disconcerting. It's okay. What we want to do is engage with them and have a mind, build a mind willing to change. The Ehe Kosu Hotsugoman is a statement of faith in the Dharma. It is challenging to read words like faith, vow, repentance, karma. So we need to take some time with them. We need to not impose our ideas on them, but rather take them and explore them. We're talking about linguistic translation, which is always tricky. And this is from medieval Japanese. And also cultural translation, personal translation. Sometimes religious differences come into play. This writing was written in 1247 when Dogen was 47 years old. It is drawn from a fascicle, Kessei Sanchoku, sound of stream, form of mountain. And that fascicle was written in 1240. So for those of you that are familiar with Dogen's writing, this is not the Mountains and Rivers Sutra, which was also written in 1240. It's a different text. This was one of the earliest of writings included in Dogen's Shobogenzo, which is a compilation of many of Dogen's writings. In the first half or so of this fascicle, Dogen tells us of the transformative encounters with the natural world that happened in the lives of ancestors in our tradition. The title of the fascicle comes from the first of these stories, in which layman Dongpo, who after many years of practice, as Dogen put it, awakened to the way upon hearing the sound of the evening current of a valley stream. It is said Dongpo heard the sound of a stream as the preaching of the Dharma, and saw the mountain as the body of the Buddha. Dogen then tells us of other such encounters and encourages us to follow them. He also very strongly tells us not to get sidetracked by fame and gain. He says, right now, we can arouse the spirit and aspiration of the Bodhisattva, a being devoted to awakening with and for all beings. Dogen wrote this fascicle, and therefore the part of it that became the Eheiko Sōhotsu Gōmon, in a time that was filled with turmoil. There was much strife and upheaval in Japan at that time. Dogen had been trying to establish a monastic community, and there were many challenges. In 1243, he was given a property way up in the mountains. And in 1246, he named this temple Eheji, the Temple of Eternal Peace. Some scholars debate whether it was Dogen who drew the Eheiko Sōhotsu Gōmon from this fascicle and wrote this out as a separate piece, or if later on people pulled it out. But I think it makes little difference to us for our purposes. I like to assume, as is traditional, that he put it together in 1247 after returning to Eheji from a time in the centers of power. A kind of reminder to everyone about what is central. Excuse me, Shinchu, it says here the microphone has changed. So I'm not sure what that means. Anyway, can you still hear me? Thank you. So imagine you have dedicated your life to practicing the way of the Buddha since you are a young person. You have taken a dangerous journey to China to encounter the teachings and practices that are in living teachers and communities. Communities that have been carrying this on for generations. You have struggled to found a community and you want to communicate what is essential. You can ask yourself, what are the points that you would make? What is crucial to you? This is Hotsu Gōmon, a statement of intention, commitment, meant as a reminder for everyday practice to keep clear what is one's fundamental direction. A writing meant to arouse the spirit of practice. it's personal. To make such a vow is to say out loud that we want to follow and make real the Buddha way. That is what Dogen is doing here. This is his voice. There are other Hotsugomon besides Dogen's, many it would seem. To read, recite, and study them is to come in close contact with the heart and mind of those who are dedicating their lives to the practice of Buddhism. We have a dialogue with these writings, with these voices. I mentioned last time I spoke of the power of this kind of study, of being willing to deeply consider what you can be taught by them, how you can be touched and changed by the encounter. This is a kind of endless, rich study. Finding the words and images that express your intention, your aspiration, your vow can also be an inspiring practice. So I encourage all of you, whether you're in the practice period or not, to consider taking some time to do that. So, let's dive into the text. I'm going to talk today about the very first section, so I'd like to read it to you. I vow with all beings from this life on throughout countless lives to hear the true Dharma, that upon hearing it, no doubt will arise in us, nor will we lack in faith, that upon meeting it, we shall renounce worldly affairs and maintain the Buddha Dharma, and that in doing so, the great earth and all living beings together attain the Buddha way. There's a lot packed into this first sentence. Let's begin with the first word. The first word in the one, in the translation I read you is I. I vow with all beings. Sometimes this is also translated as we, because the structure of Japanese language can make it either. I wrote some friends and said, I do not speak or read Japanese. And I wrote some friends and said, is there something about this sentence that determines one or the other? And there isn't. So it's very interesting, the choice that was made. Both are true and both are important. We are always with all beings, always of the same nature as all beings, but we are also unique and individual. Dogen is very clear about this. Particularity and universality are not different. We are a self with a history, talents, struggles, a lifespan, and we are also the arising of life, interdependent, communal, both at the same time. Our lives, our ordinary lives, are both realities, and our responsibility is to live that out. An I that is never separate from all being cannot be. Think about it. Is there some way that you can be apart from all of reality? Even if you lived on another planet, you would still be a part of reality. So we are unique, and we are also always with all beings. The next word is vow. I vow. We vow. This being vows. To vow is to commit, it is to aspire, to orient oneself, one whole being, according to one's deepest values. The self that I usually assume myself to be, the one I know, makes this commitment to realize that we are beyond what we think and assume. And when we do this, we come alive with all beings. We realize that we are intimate with all being, and we live in accord with that reality. One way to think of this is as if we were a jumble of metal filings, you know, a heap. Sometimes the skandhas are, one of the translations of skandhas, the nature of the self, is a heap. So we can think of ourselves in one way as a heap of metal filings all jumbled together, poking each other, you know, poking each other internally, poking each other externally. And the power of our intention is like a magnet that lines all these metal filings up. And if you've ever seen it, it's kind of beautiful the way these come together. When we are close to the magnet, when we are close to the power, the orienting power of vow, we align with it. Our beings, our bodies, our hearts, our minds align with it. This is not something that is imposed on us. It doesn't eradicate our personality. Paradoxically, it frees our individuality. It does not erase it. Harmony and difference are not separate. We can also think of this at the same time as a kind of inner compass, knowing with our bodies and our minds and hearts what true north is. We are easily confused, we humans. So not being distracted, finding our true north, what is most central to us, what is life-giving, and allowing ourselves to be aligned by it is crucial. This process can take many shapes. In the case of Zen Buddhism, it is our intention to wake up to our interdependent nature, to realize this life and the qualities of wisdom, compassion, gratitude, connection, community, in such a way that we and all beings benefit. This is called bodhicitta, the mind of awakening. In the usual way of things, we are pulled around, pushed into different shapes by habit, dominated by what we have been taught, what we assume to be true, and all that goes with it. This is known in Zen Buddhism and in other forms of Japanese Buddhism as bonpu, our foolishness, our delusion, craving, the ways we chase our tails and think we're getting somewhere. Ordinarily, we are often led by this confusion. The person committed to waking up with and for all beings, the bodhisattva, is led by vow, is led by this deep orientation to what is most true. Bodhisattva vows, and we will recite them at the end of our lecture here. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it. These are boundless vows. They include all and are directed to all. They can also seem somewhat daunting. So we have to be clear about who's making the vow. Otherwise, we run around driving ourselves nuts and feeling overwhelmed. They are a challenge to us to wake up to this interdependence. Hotsugoman are personal vows. They bring this vast and boundless vow into the particularity of our lives, our situation, our personality, our commitments, our gifts and limitations. In this practice, we articulate this vow to ourselves and place it in the center of our being. The whims and habits of the limited self are no longer the orienting principles of our lives. Keizan Jokin, who is considered to be of equal importance, Dogen, wrote this. These are his personal vows. I will arouse Bodhi mind in each and every lifetime and practice at the place of my original teacher. This was his first vow. Very specific. Practice at the place of my original teacher, together with him. The second vow is the one, he says, the second vow is the one that was my compassionate mother's will as she was passing away. That is the vow to be a bodhisattva who saves women. Following her final request, I will protect and maintain it. So this is, again, a specific vow that he makes. I want to mention, too, that this practice of vow has a joyful cast to it. I say frequently here, bodhisattvas, beings who dedicate themselves to the way, are not grim. This is about living life with a spirit of joy, and also not with a spirit of perfectionism. This is very important. Faced with our complex, flawed humanity, we, in a way, we have three choices. And we'll focus on this a little more at the end. We can be determined to perfect the self. I would say that's a hopeless effort. Get everything tidied up, no flaws, no wounds, no limitations, perfection. We can make an effort to ditch the self. Ditto, hopeless effort. We can open ourselves to life, to a life that recognizes our flawedness, our complexities, our limitations, and incorporates that into the path, is taught by this, by reality, with all beings. So this effort, this orientation, is endless. Dogen says, from this life on throughout countless lives, I vow with all beings from this life on throughout countless lives. We enter into the stream of all beings. We are that stream, particular and universal. Yes, we are born, we live very particular places and times, we die, but if we dig deeper, if we pay attention to our lives, we see that we, in our particularity, arises and passes away over and over and over and over and over again, all the time. And also, if we look carefully, we will see that at root, dynamic, interdependent reality is who we are. Yes, we are unique manifestations of reality with lives and loves, experiences that mark us, relationships and circumstances that at least in part define us. But that is true for everything. And everything depends on everything else for its existence, all together. This is who we are, Pampu, limited, marked beings, and the whole of dynamic reality. We don't try and ditch one or the other. A bodhisattva lives right in the midst of that, in both realities, seeing clearly, at least at times, our true nature, and living out our connection with all beings in this messy world. Wisdom and compassion, both active, never apart. Countless lives right now there are countless lives. And if we think in terms of linear time, this stream goes on endlessly. We vow with all beings from this life on throughout countless lives to hear the true Dharma. So what is this true Dharma? First of all, we need to consider what hearing is. Hearing is an interesting sense. It is very intimate. Hearing begins with the vibrations of tiny bones and cilia, little tiny, tiny, tiny hairs in our ears, in our body. We say we hear something based on these vibrations when our brains recognize it. But we know that there are many, many, many sounds that we cannot hear. We are not a whale or a dog or a bee. Also, our brains tune out so much of what we can hear. We need to do this to make sense of the world and not be overwhelmed by it. But we know that doing this also limits us. Reality is far more vast than we can perceive. And this reality is not an abstraction. It is what we live in, what we are made of, what is happening right now. The true Dharma is reality itself, all of it. Dogen wrote many times that all aspects of reality, even inanimate, so-called inanimate objects, preach the Dharma. All of reality expresses itself. This is the whole great earth. As I mentioned earlier, Dogen writes often, the natural world is a central teacher. What we call the natural world, well, what's not natural, but anyway. Buddha, that is awakening to reality and expressing that awakening with all beings, is present always. When we wake up to reality, we hear Buddha's voice in the sound of the stream. We see the Buddha's body in the shape of the mountain. If we pay attention, this is true all the time with all aspects of our world. To hear the true Dharma, we must listen with our whole bodies, hearts, and minds. Our whole being takes up the practice of listening, attending. Listening so that we might hear. And when we hear, we know our world more fully. And we respond more fully. Our bodies, our minds, our beings are awake in responsive relationship with what is most true in this life. I vow with all beings from this life on throughout countless lives to hear the true Dharma, that upon hearing it, no doubt will arise in us, nor will we lack in faith. This can be a confusing statement. It can sound as if you are supposed to swallow the teachings hook, line, and sinker, stop asking questions, and just accept. Nothing could be further than the truth. To wrestle with the teachings is a sign of respect. It is a way of saying to them, I see you. You are worth my time, my energy, my life. I'm going to speak about faith more later. But for now, I want you to see it as a vital path of questioning, an active engagement, a verb, not a noun. We are not talking about a set of beliefs that you must sign on to. We are talking about a way of living, a way of discovering life. When we are in responsive relationship, awake to life as it is, we are not prey to the kind of doubting that sidetracks us. Our body and mind become a question. Our life becomes a question. What is it? What? Alive, listening, responsive, whole being, open and curious. I vow with all beings from this life on throughout countless lives to hear the true Dharma, and that upon hearing it, no doubt will arise in us, nor will we lack in faith. Will we be burdened by a kind of doubt that keeps us from being fully alive? That upon meeting it, we shall renounce worldly affairs and maintain the Buddha Dharma. We will meet reality, or as Suzuki Roshi said, things as it is, fully, in each moment. We do that whether we see or hear it or not. At the beginning of the lecture, we chanted, an unsurpassable Dharma is rarely met with even 100,000 million kalpas. That's a long, 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 long time, an unimaginably long time. What this statement means is that it's not that the Dharma is not there, it's that we do not meet it. Who is this I that thinks itself separate from unsurpassable reality in this moment? This I chasing our tail, we miss everything but our tail. It can be a pretty tail, it can be a tasty tail, it can be a bitter tail. We can spin and spin and spin and spin and spin. But that tail is all we see in that limited way. When we expand our vision, our hearing, our being, our world changes. And we have the opportunity to let go of those things that keep us bound. Worldly affairs are not our day-to-day responsibilities. These worldly affairs that Dogen is referring to. He's not saying we should abandon our lives. We go into this in a way that's not distracted. The Buddha Dharma does not take place outside of our lives. In fact, when we are distracted, chasing after mirages, empty goals, that is when our lives become this distraction. So to renounce that means to remember, to come back to this center of gravity. We do not want a life of empty goals, chasing mirages. We don't want that for ourselves and we don't want it for others. So we ask our practice to help us to see what keeps us distracted and to let go of it. The Buddha Dharma is about this life with all beings. Do we want to live in such a way to maintain it, to nourish it, to bring it alive for ourselves and others? The next line tells us that when we do this, this world does come alive. Dogen says that in so doing, the great earth and all living beings together attain the Buddha way. The entire earth, the whole of life comes alive. We become a part of the life-giving effort. Not only what we perceive of the whole reality, but of the entire reality. Each moment, we live at the intersection of the whole universe in this particular moment. This particular moment contains the whole universe. There is nothing that is separate. This is our ordinary life. When we're at the grocery store, washing dishes, in innumerable Zoom meetings, helping our neighbor, getting our car fixed, the whole great earth and all living beings together are in this moment. This is where this vow takes place. This is where our life takes place. This is where we and all beings arise, interdependent. This is our reality. Let me chant this or read this first paragraph for you one more time, and then we'll open up to questions. I vow, or we vow, but I'll say I vow with all beings from this life on throughout countless lives to hear the true Dharma, that upon hearing it, no doubt will arise in us, nor will we lack in faith, that upon meeting it, we shall renounce worldly affairs and maintain the Buddha Dharma, and that in doing so, the great earth and all living beings together attain the Buddha way. Thank you.